Let's go, let's go, let's go. Tempo in and out of the huddle.
I want to go odd. 5-51 mirror.
This is Patriots Playbook.
Go stack guts combat. Odd. 51 mirror.
Patriots Playbook. Breaking down last Sunday's game.
They're looking for man coverage in the zone. They didn't have anybody to throw to. Just stay outside on the 7 route.
Next Sunday's game.
Be ready for the grapes check, too, okay? Because we'll get the bunch on 3rd and short. Even 51 grapes. Even 51 grapes.
And the rest of the NFL season.
Yeah, go ahead and hit it in there because the backers are going to fast read over the top.
And some of the fun stuff in between. Now, here's John Rook on Patriots Playbook.
Come on, let's go, let's go.
Welcome inside the playbook for Tuesday, Nitpick Tuesday, here on Patriots.com Radio. Do we really have tickets to give away?
We do, sort of. Because yeah. I was hoping if nobody calls in, I'm just going to use them.
Well, I mean, if you're going to use them, I can understand why you would want to. I mean, you know, it's time to go see some,
it's
college football.
It's my alma mater.
I know. So. Do you mass, right?
You know, I get emotional about these things.
Okay.
You know?
All right.
I know you were very emotional about your alma mater this weekend, too.
No,
and
not
I,
really.
I honestly felt.
Not really. Not terribly.
I felt bad about the little stunt I pulled with strippers on Thursday with the Boomer Sooner thing. And when I turned on and saw
hey, cut me in on lunch whenever you go.
And I was like, here's poor John trying to do his show, and I bombard him with this, and. You know, the game doesn't go as planned for Texas, and, you know, on top of that, the poor guy's going to come dragging himself in here to do a Revs game on Saturday night. That doesn't mean a damn thing. And there's probably, like, you know, 6,000 people here.
It's true.
So, I'm sorry, John.
No, that's all right. No apologies necessary. Nice job of squirming there. No, it's just, you know, hey, if you want to use the tickets, you can use the tickets. I mean, it's that simple. You need how many you got there? You got 4?
Yeah, I think this I'll go count them for you in a little bit.
You're going to use all of them?
No, you can give them away. But if nobody calls in, if nobody calls in,
I don't want to give them away. If you want to use them,
no, that's all right. We'll see how the show.
I mean,
goes.
They didn't exactly beat down the door during PFW.
Yeah, there was no call,
right?
At all? Yeah, there was no call at all.
Hmm.
We'll see how it goes.
Okay. All right. Fair enough. Well, maybe we'll talk about at least a couple of them or whatever. I don't. You know. I mean, that's fine. We'll figure something out. All right, inside the playbook today. Very simple. Nitpick Tuesday. It's what we normally do here on Tuesdays. I know that there are things that still trouble you. However, let me start off by saying that I think that the defense is heading in the right direction. Now, I know that the PFW guys were talking about that a little bit, but I have to concur. Is it where it needs to be? Nowhere close is it where it needs to be. But the fact that they, held the Jets to 3 and out on 7 of 12 possessions, I think is certainly significant. Very significant. The fact that they kept the Jets from getting in a first down until, 10.5 minutes were left in the first half, I think is also a step in the right direction. I know they would like to have been a little bit more consistent in the red zone, and Bill Belichick talked about it after the game. They wanted to be more consistent in the red zone. But you know what? We've seen this defense perform in red zone fairly well this year, but we haven't seen the other things. This week against the Jets, we saw some of the other things and we didn't see the red zone. Now, if you could put this together, you have the makings of a defense that could help you out before the year is done. And I think we all realize that that's what this team needs. This team still has a crushingly overwhelming offense. I mean, they barely even broke a sweat, and they still scored 30 against the Jets. And by the way, they can tie the NFL record of 14 straight games of 30 or more if they can score 30 against the Cowboys this weekend. I tend to believe that they could be there. The only way the Patriots don't score 30 or more is if they shoot themselves in the foot and they commit red zone turnovers, of which, here's why I'm not going to really be too concerned about the Patriots and the offense, because Brady threw his first ever red zone pick in his career at Gillette Stadium on Sunday. So, that had to happen at some point. Mistakes do happen. Guys are human. They still scored 30. 3 touchdowns, 3 field goals, they still got 30. I believe last week I predicted 30-24.
I think you did too.
Okay.
There was an interesting nugget that I saw on Patriots fifth quarter on WSBK here locally.
Yes.
That when the Patriots score 30 points in the Bill Belichick
era. They're like 65-3.
65-3. Very impressive.
Okay. So they don't lose when they score 30. Although I would say that this game this Sunday probably could end up being a shootout. Along the lines of the Buffalo Bill game, which was a 30-point game that the Patriots did not manage to win. So, it could happen. But largely, now that we're 48 hours or so removed from the game, largely I'm feeling somewhat more, encouraged defensively. They're not there yet. And I will pick some nits, and I want you to do the same. And, you reach us, of course, on the program. Via email, webradio@patriots.com, webradio@patriots.com. The Ace Ticket Hotline, 508-298-0398. Again, the area code 508-298-0398. And the Facebook page is now up and operational again today. Hit me up, John Rook, R-O-O-K-E is the name. You can submit the friend request if you haven't already done so. We'll answer the friend request, and then you can message, you can post, you can chat. Via Facebook. You can also follow me on Twitter at jrook, J-R-O-O-K-E 0722. That's the Twitter address. And we do get tweets up from time to time. All right, let's start out on the phones because he's calling from a long way away. Lucas is in Paris, France, not Texas, not New York, France. Hello, Lucas, you're in the playbook.
Hi, John, how are you doing?
I'm great. How are you, sir?
Well, fine. I'm happy, you know, We got the win over the Jets.
Yep, absolutely. What did you like about it, and what did you not like about it?
Well, I think, you know, we did a pretty heck of a job running the ball with Loughran, killing the clock afterwards in the fourth quarter.
Right.
And I think, you know, the O-line did a tremendous job as usual.
They certainly didn't run blocking, Lucas. I'll give you that. But I have to admit, one of my nitpicks that I wrote in my Go Local Prov column this week was I just thought that they were largely inconsistent because while they really did a superb job blocking for Ben Jarvis, the left side of the actually it was it would have been the blind side right side of the offensive line did have some lapses. Now I believe. Largely, I'm not sure one of them might have been Solder on the four sacks of Brady, but I think one or two of them were also Thomas Welch when he was in there. Welch was released yesterday by the team, although I think he's a candidate for getting put back onto the practice squad. So I just thought that there were some inconsistencies that the Jets put a fair enough amount of pressure on Tom Brady to cause some concern in the offensive line, because they just, that these are things they're going to have to work on.
Well, they allowed four sacks, and two of them was number 55.
Yes.
One was
Jamal Westerman. Yes.
Yeah. One was Rapati, whatever his name is.
Right.
And another one was a defensive back, I think.
Yes.
But yeah, so one on the right outside, and the other ones were on the two of them were on the left side, so on Matt Light's side.
Okay, yeah, you're right. One of them was on Matt Light's side. Thank you. That is absolutely correct.
And I thought, you know, the D line did a good job stopping the run. Honestly, I was impressed by Cal Love.
I think they did an okay job.
Yeah.
You know, I still think that, you know, I thought Sean Green ran tough. I think New York sort of abandoned the run a little bit more soon than they should have, but partially that was probably due to the fact that they were behind on the scoreboard. So I thought they were okay. I think that Gary Guyton is filling in admirably for Gerard Mayo. He's going to have to continue to do that. I think we've got to figure out a way for this team to keep Albert Haynesworth in the rotation. And, you know, step in the right direction is all I'm going to say. Step in the right direction. I thought James Ahedebo, for his first career start, I thought he performed pretty well in the secondary as well.
Except, you know, on that Holmes touchdown, big miscommunication
right.
with Arrington. Or more Arrington that screwed up. But, yeah, I thought, you know, that's what you want to do. You want to stop the, you know, relatively stop the run under the 100 yards.
Right.
And then force Mark Sanchez to throw the ball. And they really, you know, had a terrible game on the pass, on the offense,
right,
regarding the passing game.
Mm-hmm.
Mason did a lot of talking, but I think he had two snaps.
Yeah, I think it was something like that.
Yeah, big flop there. Keller, I mean, I didn't even notice him on the field. Dustin Keller, I didn't know.
No, well, see, you know, here's the thing. The one thing that the Patriots defense is doing, Lucas, is they seem to be game planning. They seem to be deciding specifically who it is on the opposing team that they need to take out. They've got to target somebody. So they're a game plan defense. Clearly, they had designs on limiting Dustin Keller's opportunities on Sunday, and it worked. They've been able to do that for the most part in each of their games, with the exception of the Buffalo game. My guess is they will figure out pretty quickly here this week who it is on Dallas that they need to take out. And Mike, frankly, as I look at it, you look at the Dallas Cowboys, I'm thinking maybe the guy that you sort of have to game plan for here is Jason Witten, because Jason Witten, a tight end for Tony Romo, he's Tony Romo's binky, you know? He's his safety valve. He's his go-to guy without a doubt. You could say, well, certainly Dez Bryant athletically is going to be a tremendous challenge. You can make a case for Miles Austin as well, but I think you have to make those two guys beat you, because if you can take Witten out, then what that does is it forces Romo to go downfield more, and I think that's where he's more likely to make mistakes. And I think we all know that Tony Romo is prone to mistakes, and I think that's the kind of situation you want to put him in.
And I have a question. I want to ask you, how hard is it for, you know, a rookie left tackle to go from to right tackle right in his first season?
I don't think it's hard for him, and it hasn't been. We've talked to him a little bit about this, and he actually, because he's played tight end, he started out as a tight end when he first went to the University of Colorado, that his footwork is pretty far advanced, and I think that's one of the reasons that the Patriots really liked him. And they thought that, you know, the Patriots, one of the things they do, Lucas, is they look for versatility in their offensive linemen. A guy may come in as a tackle Nate Solder has done, but they want to see if he can play other positions. And so they immediately moved him over to the right side when Vollmer was having his injury problems earlier this year, and liked what they saw. And so because he has got that ability to be able to adapt a little bit more so than other guys that might have played the position or been available at that position when he was drafted, I think that's one of the reasons, frankly, why they pulled him in. They think he can handle it. So his footwork, I mean, it's not exactly the same, but certainly his ability has shown out, and I think he's at least represented himself very well. He hasn't been a negative.
Yeah, because, you know, and you saw how Rex Ryan was quite aggressive yesterday night.
Sure.
And it takes a lot, you know, to get Tom Brady. You have to put at least six guys, you know, blitz from everywhere, because if it's just the front D, usually guys, they...
Right.
They can't get to Tom Brady.
Right. Yep.
No defensive lineman and the no huddle offense.
Right.
Has gone to, you know, has been able to sack Tom Brady.
Okay. Okay. Fair enough.
So yeah, I think, you know, it feels good to win against the Jets and be able to, you know, always keep the momentum.
Yep.
Beginning of the season.
Right.
And you know, I just hope that Dowling will be back. I think.
Well, you know, I think we all kind of hope that, to be quite honest with you, because I think everybody can see that he's got some physical potential there.
Yeah.
But, you know, dude can't keep himself, you know, healthy, then he'll be looking for another job this time next year.
Because, you know, somehow when he's not there, we do have, you know, he's a good player and he does good things for us on the cornerback spot. And I do think, you know, without him, we struggle a bit on the other side of the field, you know.
Yeah, so, we definitely are a little bit short in terms of depth without him in there. So, hey, Lucas, thanks for taking the time to call, pal.
It's no problem. And listen, like you said, you know, that stat's 65-3.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's going to keep on going. I predict at least 15 in a row games in a row with 40 or more plus points.
All right. We'll hold you to that, man. Thank you. Appreciate the call. Lucas is dialed us in all the way from Paris. Where is it? It's probably, what, about 7 o'clock Eastern time there?
Yeah.
5 hours ahead
now?
I guess I should have asked him. All right. Back to the phones. Travis in Newton, Mass. Travis, you're in the playbook.
Hey, I was calling in regards to the UMass UNH game tickets.
Yeah, you want them?
Yeah, that'd be great.
Awesome, you got them.
Awesome, thank you.
Yeah, you want all four of them?
I'll take whatever.
Okay. Did you go to UMass or UNH?
I went to UMass, graduated 2008, so big fan of James Ahidabu.
No kidding. How about that? All right. Fair enough. Now, I got to ask you a question, though, because, quite frankly, you know, with UMass getting ready to go into the Mid-American Conference, this is a big deal. How do you think they'll fare when they move up to the big time?
It might be, you know, usually they're one of the stronger programs, I feel, in D1AA.
Yeah.
I think it will be a quicker transition than other schools, so I'm hoping, at least. And there's a hoping that the Big East might want to expand six more teams and maybe we can jump in there.
Well, the Big East right now is kind of like, hey, it's an open barn door. Everybody come on in.
Yeah, you know? Exactly.
Well, I know they may have to do something like that. All right, that sounds cool. It's good. You got anything on the Patriots you want to add?
Just looking to see how they handle Romo and Dez Bryant, really, and Witten.
Well, to me, the big key here, at least just this early stage of the game, is, you know, Mark Witten.
You mean Jason Witten?
Thank you. I said Mark Witten. Mark Hart-Hitting Witten. I was thinking of Mark Hart-Hitting Witten. And the reason I was thinking that is because he was actually at a camp that my son attended this summer down in Florida. And so I remember thinking, oh, yeah, I remember Mark Witten. And so I had Mark Witten on the brain when I looked at Jason Witten on my, you know, roster here. And I'm like, no, that's not.
And I
should have known better.
I even remember watching Mark Witten play, so you don't have to feel that old.
Well, Mark Witten played for the St. Louis Cardinals. He was in the Red Sox organization. When did he play for the Sox? Back in the 90s. I think for a year or two. So it would have been probably 15, 16 years ago at least that he was with the Sox. But that was a long time ago. So, yes, Jason Witten, thank you very much for bringing that up. Yeah, that's going to be a huge key. All right, Travis, you got it. I'm going to put you on hold, and then we'll let Kevin take your info, and then we'll send you the tickets. By the way, don't fret. If you're interested in UMass, UNH, New Hampshire tickets, which the game, if you're not aware of it, if you're from outside the area, University of Massachusetts and University of New Hampshire last year started a tradition called the Colonial Clash. Which both being in the Colonial Athletic Association at present for college football, they moved their one home game against each other every year here to Gillette Stadium. They started it last year. It was received fairly well. I think they actually had a pretty good crowd last year. I want to say, was it 30,000, something like that last year? And they're going to play again here this weekend. And so we've got tickets for UNH and UMass to give away, I think, every day this week. So if you're interested in tickets and you were not able to get them today, as Travis just took them from us, then make sure you tune in tomorrow or Thursday, and we'll have more tickets that we can give away if you can get to Foxborough for the game this Saturday. Now, of course, on a larger note, UMass, because they're getting ready to upgrade and move from the championship subdivision, formerly 1AA, as Travis said, into the bowl subdivision, which is formerly 1A, starting next year, when they move into the Mid-American Conference, they'll be playing these teams like Ohio University and Marshall and some of the others.
Were you asking me a question? I'm sorry.
No. I was just saying I think we have some more tickets to give away this week,
yeah,
correct?
I think Fred will probably try again tomorrow and the next day as well.
Perfect.
His plan was to give away like four a day or something.
Well, I think that's great, and I think we should. We bring people in. I know they had a good crowd here last year for the game, so that's pretty good.
They did.
So because of that, and then of course, starting next year, UMass upgrades its schedule to the FBS.
You know what the thing is?
Pretty exciting.
You know, here's Fred, poor Fred, and I think we might have got like two phone calls today for PFW, and I think they were international. So, you know,
people
that aren't around
the
area, but like, Rook, you bring the phone calls. You get two or three calls.
Well, you
20
know,
minutes. The contest heats up when John Rooks takes the mic. So I can't imagine. I have in my calendar, by the way.
Yeah.
That you wanted to do that. Was it
yes.
the game show?
Yeah,
thing
game
next
show.
Wednesday?
Yeah. So it'd be next Wednesday, right?
Yep. So I have it in my calendar here, like Wednesday the 19th. So, you know, God knows what the callers are going
to do. All right, we have to come up with prizes, so we'll have to talk about this.
You know, hopefully some PFW swag.
Yeah,
we'll talk to Freddie.
Yeah. So you want to mark this down on your calendar, the 1 week from tomorrow.
It's in my Outlook, baby.
Okay, game show Wednesday here inside the playbook. We're going to do it, and we're going to have some fun with it. So you want to make sure that even though it's an off week and we don't have a game to talk about, we'll be having some serious stuff going on here in Patriots Playbook. Now, I was talking, though, about UMass and moving up to FBS and getting Division I, and I know somebody mentioned that to me as well. I said, well, the Big East is looking now. because people know that I cover a lot of Big East football as well as basketball. And I'm like, yeah, but I don't know that. See, here's the problem with that. Villanova is also in the Big East for basketball, as many of you, I'm sure, are aware. And they've been debating on whether or not to upgrade their football program. And so you can't really afford to do that with two schools, because Villanova would be weak or weaker in Division 1A or FBS for a while. You know, I just think the timing is off for UMass to be able to be a viable entity.
Speaking of the Big East here,
yes,
I had reached out to your friend and colleague Jim Donaldson,
yes,
at the Projo,
yes,
and he wasn't feeling well, and I wanted to, you know, just kind of check up.
Right.
So hopefully we're going to be able to get Jim on this week. And
okay.
His response, I asked him, you know, how are you feeling? And he goes, tell John I'm feeling better than the Big East right now. So I wanted to pass that along to you.
Yeah, well, everybody seems to be, you know, singing the funeral dirge for the Big East Conference.
I call it the Big East Blues.
That's actually fairly appropriate. We might have to come up with some Big East Blues music for that. I think they're going to be fine, to be honest with you. It's not going to be quite what we thought it was going to be. But college football needs to exist in the East. There needs to be a home in the East, just like the Big 12 needed to survive, you know, in the Midwest largely and in the South. You know, TCU leaving, you know, to go back to the Big 12, if you will. You know, that's a no-brainer. Would love to have had the Horned Frogs, you know, in the Big East, but I certainly understand why they're going to the Big 12, because they get a chance to renew some rivalries that they haven't done for a while, several years since the Southwest Conference broke up in the mid-90s. You know, I think if the Big East does this right, I think the main frustration in college football circles here, I think the main frustration with people is the Big East has had, they haven't done anything. They've waited. They haven't been proactive for a lot of people. And quite frankly, the reason that I gave, and I think this is probably as good a reason as any, as to why they've struggled being proactive here, is because they have 14, 15, 16, they had 17 different schools to answer to. That's a lot of consensus you have to get, especially when you have institutions, schools in this large conglomerate of a conference that all have different agendas. You got small schools, you got big schools. You got private schools, you got public schools. You got business schools, you have fine arts school. I mean, you got everything. The only thing they have in common is the fact that they're all members in the Big East. They really don't have anything else in common. What in the world does Providence College or does Georgetown have in common with the University of South Florida? South Florida's got 45, 46,000 students. Providence College is the smallest school amongst all schools in what are called FBS conferences, BCS leagues. Smallest. They've got roughly 3,900 undergraduates. How do you compete with 3,900 graduates against a school that has over 40,000? And if Central Florida in Orlando gets in, and the latest today is that the Big East is apparently has begun talks already, and that a bid could be imminent offered to the University of Central Florida in Orlando, that's a student body with over 50,000 students in it. What in the world do they have in common with St. John's? You know, it's pure lunacy. So, you know, I think there's going to be a place for the Big East to fall. My guess is that at some point in time, that, you know, the basketball schools there will probably move off on their own, and but they are forced to kind of sit and wait because football drives the bust in major college athletics. And basketball schools don't want to give up on the Big East name and the Madison Square Garden, you know, playing in March Madness and all that stuff, and nor should they. They're the innocent bystanders in all this. So football's process has got to play itself out. And hopefully, you know, the game of musical chairs will end up and there will be a spot for everybody. But, of course, we all know that musical chairs usually knocks somebody out along the way. So that's what's going on in college football, in case you didn't know. All right, now, back to the matters at hand. And we do have some nits to pick on the Patriots from the Jets game. Webradio@patriots.com, the email address if you want to join us and fire off with your nitpicks. The Ace Ticket Hotline, 508-298-0398. And you can hit me on the Facebook page. Let's get Mike in Florida in here. Mike, you're in the playbook. How are you today?
Hey, John, how you doing?
I'm good, buddy. What's happening?
Good. Not much. Listen, I want to make a little rant here, if you don't mind.
Go.
Do some listener on listener crime.
OK. Okay.
It has to do with one of my nitpicks. But first, let me throw out a couple of positive things.
Okay.
I love seeing the red unis out there. They look sharp as hell. I was watching with a friend, and we were discussing how sharp they look, how, you know, nice and clean they look on TV.
Mm-hmm.
And the guy says, yeah, what's the deal with the Patriots with the gray uniforms? And I said, they're not gray. They're supposed to be silver. He said, yeah, what the hell's the deal with the Patriots and silver uniforms? You know, it makes sense. The Patriots are supposed to be red, white, and blue, man, not silver. And it's bugged me ever since, was it, 92 when they changed them?
Well, they were largely, it was actually, when did we go to the new unis? It was 93. And, yeah, it was after 92. I think it was for the 93 season because it was my first year with the team, which was 93. This is my 19th year. So, yeah. And that was when they went to the new scheme, and that's when we went to the Flying Elvis. And the reason, and largely you remember those old jerseys when the team changed the logo. The old jerseys were largely blue. They weren't dark blue like they are now. They were a little bit more royal blue than they are. And there was a little red mixed in, but they added silver because, quite frankly, silver sells. I mean, yeah, silver has always sold. Look at the Dallas Cowboys. Look at the Oakland Raiders. Silver has always sold, so they did it to be, you know, different without really messing up the scheme. And then, of course, you recall, gosh, when was it, Mike? 5, 6, 7 years ago when the Patriots had a third uniform, and remember they had the silver jersey?
Oh, yeah, that was horrendous.
Yeah, it looked like it was like a dirty white almost.
Exactly.
You know, which I thought was a – but you know why they did that, of course, because it gives them an opportunity to what?
Sell jerseys.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, the only reason that silver was really added. You add it from strictly a marketing standpoint. Now, back to your original point, though, about Pat Patriot. Isn't it funny how many years that we've been removed from Pat, and it would be, what, 19 years now since Pat, you know, himself has really been in his full splendor on the side of the helmets on a regular basis. Isn't it funny how we really appreciate him more as the days go by?
That's true. It's memories from us old-timers, even though the memories weren't so great, you know, for the most part back in those days. But still, you know, I think it looks sharp, too. I like it. I really don't like the silver uniforms. I mean, they've bugged me since day one. You know, I know it's kind of silly for a lot of people, but...
I had some Jets people tell me, Mike, some Jets people that came for the game tell me that they really like, you know, the old Patriot uniform, and especially the red jersey.
Right.
You know, they said, you know, and even seeing Pat Patriot again on the side of the helmet, man, that speaks to the old AFL. And they thought it was very apropos, even though it really had nothing to do with it, but they thought it was very apropos that the Patriots were celebrating, if you will, their throwbacks in the weekend that Al Davis had passed away. And I never thought about it until the guy brought it up that I was talking to. But, you know, he's right. I mean, really, it was a great opportunity to celebrate, you know, not only your history, but also to celebrate the old American Football League, because that's what the Patriots looked like back in the 90s and the 80s and the 70s and even back into the 60s, with the red uniform and Pat Patriot on the side. And, of course, you're right, those weren't exactly glory days for New England, but, you know, the uniforms were pretty sharp as far as throwbacks.
Right. Absolutely. All right, so listen, let me do a little bit of listener crime here. I got to complain. I'm just tired of hearing it for weeks now. And so I got a vent against
go.
A few people who I keep on hearing.
All right, go.
You know, I've been watching football for 30 something years. I played and all this good stuff, and it's frustrating. With first of all, you know, like we were just talking about with the Pats, you know, the unglory years, and these new fans, they don't know anything except Super Bowls, 14-2, you know, playoffs, and we lose a couple of games, they freak out, and it's frustrating.
Mm-hmm.
And these are the same guys who've learned all their football from Madden. You know, they don't know anything about Madden
to me,
football,
right?
And they've watched
Knock
for 2 years, and the Patriots are good.
Yeah, right.
You know?
Okay.
And so I hear phone calls and emails of people, you know, saying that Bill Belichick has to go. And when I hear
who
that,
said that?
There's been some emails lately. You know, after the loss, and you must have heard a few of them.
I've seen
here and there.
I've heard and seen emails that
drive me nuts because personally. You know, I think Bill Belichick isn't the greatest person in the world, but find me a better coach, you know, and then talk to me. But don't just, you know, throw out these nonsensical, Bill has to go or his time is over. And I also heard recently somebody saying that the Patriots are a cheap organization. It's the furthest thing from the truth. You know, we got the highest paid quarterback in the league. We got the highest paid guard in the league. And we've also given plenty of money to has-beens like the linebacker last year, Tully Bantakane, we overpaid him. We're overpaying Ellis. We overpay a lot of guys. You know, so it's not a cheap organization, that's for sure.
Wow.
I've heard emailers say that Bill should be not allowed to buy the groceries anymore because he's swinging and missing on draft picks and free agency and stuff. But I haven't heard anybody saying that he should be removed as the head coach.
There's been a couple. I know specifically because when I heard it, I was shocked. And I was like, how can these guys be nice to him after he said
they
that?
They want you to cook the dinner.
Him, but
at least they ought to let you shop for some of the groceries.
But a couple more things real quick. And I've heard now a few people, more than two, say that what the defense needs is all-world rookie played six snaps cornerback Roz Igaling. Now, if that's not reaching for straws, I mean, come on. I literally, like two or three people have said that this defense will be okay once we get Roz Igaling back. The guy played, 10 snaps in his first game. Sure, he didn't look horrible, but we don't know anything about this guy. You know, to say that the defense is going to be a lot better because of him is really holding up our hope that I don't think we should be.
Yeah. Well, Roz Idaling, look, I think he was I know why the Patriots drafted him because, you know, he physically looked like he could be trouble for the bigger physical receivers in the NFL. But, you know, he had injury problems at Virginia, okay?
Right.
So, you know, they knew that they were taking a gamble on this guy with that first pick in the second round. And,
right.
And so far, they've gambled poorly on that one.
Right. But, you know, any rookie, you can't pin your hopes on him. You know, regardless of injuries or not.
No, he's a rookie. You're absolutely right. I mean, what you got out of, for instance, Mike, what you got out of Devin McCourty last year is unbelievable.
Right.
Okay?
That's once a decade that happens.
Yes, exactly. So you can't expect to do that every stinking year.
Right.
And I agree with you there. I think there's some unrealistic expectations. But, frankly, we don't know about Dallin because we haven't seen him on the field enough.
Exactly. He's a total question mark. That's why you can't place any hope on him. That's why it's...
I don't want to call him a bust either, though. I don't want to call him a bust yet either.
No, of course not.
It's not fair. No. You really shouldn't call a guy a bust until they've had at least 3 years in the league. Now, the one person that comes to mind that I kind of was on as far as a bust really quick was Darius Butler. I didn't, and that's only because I saw him play in college, and he was adequate, but I didn't think he was a world beater, and I didn't think he was worthy of the high pick when the Patriots took him. So, you know, I'm like, okay, why did they do that high? They could have probably signed the guy as a free agent, or certainly with a lower pick.
He was rated pretty high by a lot of services.
Yeah, but,
you know, it didn't work out.
All I'm telling you is I'm going by the eyeball check, all right?
Yeah.
And I didn't think he covered guys in the Big East, much less cover guys in the NFL. And obviously that one proved to be true. So I got one right, they got one wrong. Big deal, we all do it.
Yep. Hey, John, let me throw one more thing at you.
Go.
I found, you know, obviously we all hate the Jets, and it was a great win, man. It was the most my heart beat in quite some time.
Yeah.
Some time.
Yeah.
But you know what? It hit me that if the Jets had their biggest weakness is the most important player, and that's the quarterback.
Yeah.
Jets would be a scary, scary team if they had a good quarterback, even though the D gave up a lot of running yards, and that was impressive by us. But, man, if Sanchez didn't stink so bad or wasn't so inconsistent, that would be one hell of a team.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. That's a good point. I was listening this morning to some local talk radio around here, and they were talking about how I think Sanchez, in terms of the PBR rating, I think it was, is like next to last in the NFL. And that if they had even a quarterback somewhere in the middling range, somewhere in that 14 to 16 range, that the Jets, you know, could be where the Patriots are right now. That Sanchez is the one that's holding them back. I can't disagree with that. And I think all what's happening here is I think he's going through nothing more than really a sophomore slump. I don't think he's being helped out by Plaxico Burress. I don't think he's being helped out by Santonio Holmes. I don't think he's being helped out at all by the inconsistencies they've had in their offensive line play. I would tell you that I think they played as well as they did on Sunday because they had Nick Mangold back at center. And I think they were able to control the line of scrimmage somewhat. But I also thought that, you know, while Sean Green pounded away at times, I don't think they were consistent enough with it. I mean, guy had, 80-some-odd yards rushing. You know, why not, you know, the best way to beat the Patriots is to keep the ball out of New England's hands. They should have ridden that horse a little bit more than they did, to be quite honest with you. But maybe they couldn't because the Patriots took out Dustin Keller. That was a huge part, I thought, to the game plan.
Yep. And I'll tell you, I think next week we're really going to tell if the defense has improved at all or if it was just the Jets' rotten offense, because the Dallas offense is good.
I agree with that. I think this will easily be their most severe test.
Yep.
In terms of an opposing offense coming in. The guy that worries me the most is Jason Witten, because I know that, you know, Tony Romo loves him like a brother. So because of that, to me, that's the guy that the Patriots have to target and take out. And then that's going to put an extraordinary amount of pressure on Bodden and McCourty, at the very least, to cover Dez Bryant and Miles Austin.
Big challenge.
It is a huge challenge. Yep.
Thanks, buddy.
Mike, thanks for the call. Appreciate that. Good stuff from Mike in Florida. 508-298-0398. That's how you'll reach us on the Ace Ticket Hotline, 508-298-0398. Let's get a little time out in here, and then we come back with some emails. We'll come back with some Facebook posts, your phone calls as well. Nitpick Tuesday. Are we all happy in Patriot Nation here?
Honey, ready to go curtain shopping?
Absolutely. There's nothing more I'd rather be doing on Patriots game day than helping make home drapery decisions.
Now with NFL Mobile on your phone, you can enjoy going just about anywhere this football season. Watch live games on Thursday and Sunday nights, all right from the palm of your hand.
So, what do you think of these lilac-colored valances?
Bats interception, yes! Sure, those will hang nicely next to the wall. It'll just light up the room.
We should shop more often.
Oh, you bet. Anytime. He's at the 50, the 40!
NFL Mobile, only from Verizon. Your gateway to live NFL games and more.
The 30, the 20, the 10! Booyah! Touchdown, Patriots!
Shh, you are frightening a seamstress.
Oh, that tieback is so money.
Text NFL to 8915 to download NFL Mobile today. Verizon, official wireless provider of the New England Patriots. Message and data rates may apply. Available on select smartphones. Coverage not available everywhere.
If you didn't know, AutoTrader.com has new cars, well, I'm here inside the body of a new car shopper to enlighten you. First stop, his heart. Oh, this guy loves fresh from the showroom SUVs with Wi-Fi. Now let's go up and see what his head's thinking. See, at AutoTrader.com, you can compare brand spanking new cars and special offers. Deals everywhere. Think he's picked one? Bingo! Find the new car your head and heart can agree on. AutoTrader.com, now the ultimate new car marketplace.
Hey, it's Jim from Ace Ticket, Boston's very own ticket agency. Ace Ticket is based here in Boston, so we know every seat in every venue. We're Boston fans just like you, from Boston sports to concert and theater. Whether you need one ticket or 100, Ace has you covered. So treat yourself or someone special. Call 1-800-MY-SEATS or visit aceticket.com and take advantage of our free and easy pickup at our Fenway Park or Boston Garden location. That's 1-800-MY-SEATS.
1-800-MY-SEATS.
I love this card.
With my Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card, I earn more cash back for the things I buy most.
Cash back for the things I buy every day.
I earn 1% cash back on every purchase, everywhere, every time.
2% on groceries.
And 3% on gas. Automatically, no hoops to jump through.
It's as easy as 1, 2, 3.
That's 1% cash back on a cut and color.
2% back on food for the neighborhood barbecue.
And 3% cash back on getting the kids to soccer practice and football and baseball.
Extra cash back on groceries and gas. That's my kind of card.
Earn 1, 2, 3% cash back for the things you buy most with the Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card. Apply online or at a Bank of America near you. Quarterly maximum on grocery and gas bonus rewards. To learn more, go to bankofamerica.com/getcashback. Bank of America, the official bank of the New England Patriots.
Copyright 2011 Bank of America Corporation.
I love this card.
With my Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card, I earn more cash back for the things I buy most.
Cash back for the things I buy every day.
I earn 1% cash back on every purchase, everywhere, every time.
2% on groceries.
And 3% on gas. Automatically, no hoops to jump through.
It's as easy as 1, 2, 3.
That's 1% cash back on a cut and color.
2% back on food for the neighborhood barbecue.
And 3% cash back on getting the kids to soccer practice and football and baseball.
Extra cash back on groceries and gas. That's my kind of card.
Earn 1, 2, 3% cash back for the things you buy most with the Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card. Apply online or at a Bank of America near you. Quarterly maximum on grocery and gas bonus rewards. To learn more, go to bankofamerica.com/getcashback. Bank of America, the official bank of the New England Patriots.
Copyright 2011 Bank of America Corporation.
Now is your chance to hit up John Rook inside the Patriots playbook on the Ace Ticket Hotline. Call 508-298-0398. That's 508-298-0398. Now, back to your host, John Rook.
All right, Joshua sends this on Facebook, and, you know, he asked why the NFL isn't investigating the fact that the Jets had a cameraman on the sideline shooting video. You saw that. It's been blogged, I think, by...
I saw him right next to me.
Yeah. Oh, he was right there? All right, you saw him. Good, Kevin. All right, good. Hold on just a second here, because I want you to talk about it. Apparently, there are two different rules here within the rule book of the interpretation that apply. Number one would be the fact that back in 2007, when all the whole Spygate thing was happening, that there's a rule that says no video recording devices of any kind are permitted to be in use in the coach's booth, on the field, or in the locker room during the game. Okay, that being said, the later version, I guess this is up to date this year, 2011 rule book, that says club video crews and crews from television stations that produce and telecast club-licensed programming, like coaches' shows and
like
stuff like that.
All access and stuff.
Right,
like
all
that.
Access, all that stuff. May be permitted to have a camera on the sideline to shoot footage for those club-licensed programs only, and you got to wear a lime green vest to do it, and that's why the guy on the Jets sideline who was shown standing behind Schottenheimer, their offensive coordinator, was wearing a lime green vest. Now, the shot that the Boston Herald blog used today, and I know the one that has apparently some Patriot fans up in arms here, is because while the Jets seem to be looking one direction, the camera's shooting another way.
One, yeah.
So what's up with that?
Well, I actually saw a guy. So I'm down. Usually what I do, John, is I stand opposite the what we call in the business the red hat.
Yes.
Which kind of
red hat is the guy who signals the timeouts for television.
Yeah. Yes. So, you know, we try to give the in-stadium folks heads up with, or the coaches or whoever the heck needs it. So I used to stand across from him on the Patriot bench, and he used to stand always on the opposition's bench.
Right.
At about the 30-yard line. Mm-hmm. In the north end zone, or toward the north end zone. He has since changed positions, and this was the first game he had done so in my tenure here. He stood on the Patriot bench at about the 30-yard line on the south, so it was completely opposite. So the easiest thing for me to do my job well is to stand across from him so I don't have to look down the line through all these players and coaches to try to see what he's doing.
Okay.
But I felt uncomfortable standing on the Jets sideline, you know, on the fringe of the coach's box, decked out in Patriots gear with a headset on.
I got to understand why you would.
And, you know, just from a professional standpoint, didn't think that
even
it
though
was,
it's your stadium.
Yes, but still, just from a, as a professional and, you know, as a courtesy to them, you know, I don't feel like I have to explain myself to anybody, but I just felt it was better that I stay on our sideline, and I've always been instructed to do so.
Mm-hmm.
So I went down and stood next to the guy, the red hat, on the Patriots sideline at about the 30-yard line toward the south end zone. And in the second half at some point, I just remember looking to my left, and here's this guy with a camera on his shoulder, and he's wearing a Jets hat and a Jets polo. And he's got an all-access credential, so he was credentialed.
Mm-hmm.
But it just felt weird that here I am on the 30-yard line, basically on the bench, on the edge of the bench. I have players standing not more than 3 feet to the right of me. And here's this guy just to my left with a camera, you know, shooting, you know, with, you know, a Jets hat and a Jets polo. I just thought it was weird. But he was credentialed, and apparently, you know, it's allowed. I just thought it was weird that he would be on our sideline.
I kind of find it curious that, you know, there's one rule in 07 that gets, you know, sort of remade as far as 2011 is concerned, and you really don't know. I mean, you really don't know what the guy's shooting. We don't have any way of noting unless somehow
you view the tape.
Yeah, somebody gets a chance to review the tape.
Yeah, I'm just doing, you know, my job, just paying attention, doing what I'm supposed to be doing. So I'm not, you know, keeping an eye on what he's doing. It just kind of raised an eyebrow that, like, you know, if I'm one of the Patriots coaches or if I work for the football ops department or something like that, and I look and I see a guy dressed in the other team's colors with a camera on his shoulder standing next to my bench, it would just kind of, like, cause me to raise an eyebrow maybe.
Hmm.
But he was credentialed, and, you know, he did have a bib and all that stuff. So I'm not saying he wasn't supposed to be there. It was just an odd situation that I – let's see. This is my – that was probably about my, like, 15th home game so far, John, and I don't recall seeing that ever.
Well, you know, okay. Not, I don't know that every team has a quote unquote magazine program where they would shoot for this, but apparently the rule book says that this is allowed. I don't know how you differentiate between the 07 rule and the 2011 rule when the 07 rule says no cameras of any kind are allowed on the sidelines. None. Zero. And yet now they're saying that this is possible. So look, can we just at least for this, at this stage, can we just at least agree that 2007 and Spygate was somewhat overblown? I mean, Bill Belichick was caught doing whatever he did. He paid a heavy price for it. The Patriots paid a heavy price for it, not only in cash, but in certainly in reputation and integrity throughout the entire league. I think we all realize that. And I know a lot of people around here support our coach, support our owner, support our this, support our that. Fact is, they were doing something that they interpreted incorrectly. It may have been their interpretation, but it was apparently not the interpretation that the NFL had in mind, which is why they were fined and penalized. Case closed. Now we get to this. And it's curious that it just happens to be the Jets, what this is being talked about. I have not seen another case of another team having, you know, this kind of a, you know, videographer on their sideline like this yet this year. This is the first I've heard of it. First I've seen of it. Doesn't mean it hasn't happened, but it is the first. Now, is it just because there are some enterprising Pats fans pointing it out because it just happens to be the Jets? I don't know. I don't know. I'm not sure we can answer that. I'm not sure I really want to open up this whole Pandora's box again that we did 4 years ago. I'm just not sure I want to go there because I think it was overblown 4 years ago. Because I think, first of all, if you really are holier than thou and you think this stuff doesn't go on, you just don't have any clue what you're talking about. Underhandedness just goes hand in hand with sports. You're going to do anything and everything you can to get an advantage on your opponent, especially if it's a rival like the Jets are.
And I tell you what, John, let's back the train up to January 2011.
Doesn't make it right, by the way, but it goes on.
But let's think about this for a second.
All right.
So Jets Patriots playoff game.
Yeah.
Second round, the divisional round. I'm, you know, doing my job again down on the sideline. On the Patriot bench, right at about the 30-yard line, and I actually had NFL security who were patrolling both sidelines come up and, you know, check my credential and check my clipboard for what I was taking notes on and check my headset to make sure that I was talking, you know, to the appropriate parties and all that type of thing. So there is security present, but again, that only happened to me, John, during the playoffs.
Right.
But you would just think that, I guess somebody, and maybe somebody did and I just didn't see it, but you would think that someone would question his purpose and his presence on the Patriots sideline. If, mm-hmm. you know, if he's in the Jets huddle, like I know I see a lot of our all access cameras here for Kraft Sports Productions, you know, kind of filming behind the scenes stuff, on along the bench, which they're allowed to shoot,
mm-hmm.
then that's fine. But I think, could you imagine if some of the all-access cameras were on the Jet sideline, hovering over Rex as he was giving his
It would have been all over. And I,
you know
and
what I mean?
So, and I think there are probably some Patriots fans that are probably screaming at us right now on the other side of their computer screens here saying the same thing. Like,
yeah, so
hey, if this was us shooting, other side. Yeah,
yeah,
you're right. And nor could I. Well, but the thing is that it wouldn't happen because of what we went
through.
That's
being a jackass.
Well, yeah. For lack of a better phrase, Rex, yeah, probably so. But we wouldn't be put in that position because of what happened in 07. We're going to be hopefully now careful because, hey, you know, we're a little gun shy about that around here. Our coach, our owner, our entire organization, Patriot fans everywhere, you're a little gun shy over that. Don't think that gives the Jets carte blanche to kind of, you know, do what they apparently do. But then again, we don't know what they were doing. Somebody should probably look into it. Somebody in the NFL undoubtedly is going to look into it.
Yeah, but I mean, it's all over the news.
But yes, because it was talked about this morning. So I'm sure somebody will look into it. But the rule book says these guys with the lime green, you know, vests are allowed on the sideline. So the Patriots should have a lime green vest guy of their own.
On a positive note, though, John, which we haven't touched on yet, and I feel remiss to do so at, you know, an hour into the show.
Yeah.
It was quite the presentation before the game with the Bruins, wasn't it?
Well, that was nice. Cool?
It was a really cool moment, and one that you and
how about when Nathan Horton did the water bottle on the logo in midfield?
I had to cue him to do that. So I got some news time, which I was very proud of, as you can imagine.
Nice.
But, I was sitting there thinking as kickoff was about to happen.
Right.
That was pretty cool. And I was like, I'll remember that for a while.
I enjoyed announcing those guys. That was a kick for me.
It's cool.
Yeah, it's very cool.
And now.
It was fun. It's fun. And of course, Big Z carrying the Stanley Cup over his head. And of course, dude's 6'9" to begin with anyway. So, you know, I'm not sure that trophy has been held by human hands and been more than 7 feet off the ground.
No, it must
ever before.
It's gonna get a nosebleed up there.
No kidding. Oh, goodness. All right. Here's our boy Derek at University of Arizona. What's up, Derek?
Good. I'm doing good. Just laughing at you guys right now.
Laughing at us or laughing with us? Yeah, there you go.
I love the dirty water on the field. That's great stuff.
It was a lot of fun. And, there was a real, Boston Garden, atmosphere to it when the Bruins came out before the game. And I thought that was really good because, quite frankly, and I wrote about this week, but, because there wasn't any smack talk like we're accustomed to having leading into the game, I just thought that this was not a typical Jets-Patriots pregame, week before the game, yapping back and forth. It was just really sort of nondescript. So I thought we needed a little emotional boost, and I thought the Bruins provided that, especially for the fans.
I agree 100%. It really wasn't a big rivalry week. I'm not really sure why that is. Do you have any ideas?
No, I think it's probably, just my supposition here. Number one, because the Patriots are all about business because they got beat in the playoffs and they were embarrassed by that loss last year, here at Gillette. So I think they definitely, wanted to tamp it down. Number two, I think the Jets wanted to tamp it down because, quite frankly, they came into this game with losing two in a row. Now they've lost three in a row. So right now you'd have to say the Jets suck more than they're good.
That's probably what I would point to.
So I think if you look at those two, you look at those two things right there, and number two, and number three, last and certainly not least, these guys got to play each other again.
Yep.
Right?
Yep. Next time, I think, when is that? Was it 5 weeks from now? 4 weeks from now?
Yeah, four weeks, I think, yeah. Is that right? Next month. Right. Yeah, next month, 4 weeks.
Yeah, they got Cowboys, bye week, Steelers, Giants, Jets.
Yes, correct.
If I'm not mistaken.
Yes, yes.
But, next time you might see a little more trash talking, but, whatever. I'll take the win either way.
Absolutely.
Trash talking without it.
So. Absolutely. It's all about getting the W. That's absolutely right.
But speaking of rivalry and, switch of players and things like that, how did you think James Ahedebo starts? And if Collins, if you're still around, I want to talk to you about it too, because, I heard you, if I'm not mistaken, I heard you say some things like, you didn't like what you saw from him.
No, I wasn't a fan.
On Sunday, and I disagree. I actually liked what I saw from
him. You have every right to disagree, and Adam and I, Adam Jones and I went at it in the post-game show.
He didn't like it? Adam didn't like it?
No, I didn't like it.
Oh,
Adam,
you didn't like
Adam
it?
Adam liked it. I wasn't a huge, I don't know, I guess the scoring plays stick out to me, and the one where, he had help with Kyle Arrington and got beat like a drum by Santonio on 3rd and 7.
Yeah, on that corner right?
That's the play that's imprinted in my mind, Derek. And it's like, he's not out there on a Hittabo Island out there. I mean, he's got help short with Arrington, and his responsibility was the deep part of that coverage. And he just, I don't know whether he thought he was going to try to undercut it or what, or he just had a brain fart and forgot where he was on the field. But, I mean, it's Santonio Holmes, you know what I mean? I don't know how you can let him get that wide open on 3rd and 7 at that juncture of the game for a touchdown.
Well, here's my thinking on it, and, I agree with you, because that play, that was a really bad play. But, just because the safety play has been so poor
at
this point in the season, I thought it was at least nice to see him flash in a positive way multiple times. I thought he was really, really strong in the run game.
Mm-hmm.
I know we already have another safety in Patrick Chung, who struggles in pass coverage, but is a really strong run guy. But
he's a physical player.
It was nice to see him flash in a positive way because, Sergio Brown and Josh Barrett have, been so bad. But also because we saw in the week before when Richard Seymour, who played a previous team, made so many mistakes. He played for the Jets last year. So I thought, and he played, according to Mike Reese, 51 of 54 of the defensive snaps. So he put on the field a lot, and I thought he controlled himself pretty well. Yes, you know, he did struggle on that play and a couple others.
Here's where I'll agree with you, Derek. If you're taking into account what he is and what he's gonna be for the rest of his career, sure. You know, he had a decent game for what he is. I think he's a practice squad player. And
ahead of ball?
Yeah, special teams player at most.
Okay, you know what? I think he's a special teams player primarily. Okay. But the reason they got him, have you ever seen stood next to the guy up close?
Yeah. Okay. No, I was in class with him a bunch of times.
Good. The guy's jacked. All right. He's got great physical presence. Yeah. He's got, you know, he's a physical player. He's got good size. He's got decent ability. I realize that, you know, he's a UMass product and you don't like him. So I think that's actually pretty odd for you.
Yeah, it is odd.
But I think he's got upside. You hear the term upside, which I really don't like, but I'll use it here because there is potential.
Okay.
He's a relatively young player. They also did not like the fact that Sergio Brown, previous week, seemed to be biting off a little bit more than he could chew. So rather than shuck, you know, the plan altogether here and say, all right, let's give a guy who's got a little more veteran experience, like Ahedebo, a chance here. Perfect week to give him the chance because, quite frankly, he was with the Jets last year.
He knew
the Jets. I talked to James about this after the game. He came up into the Putnam Clubhouse for the post-game interview with the season ticket holders that I do. And he came up and we sat and we talked about that. And he said, yeah, there's definitely something to it. I really feel like, you know, I helped us defensively identify what we needed to do to slow the Jets down. And I said two words, Dustin Keller. And he said, bingo. That was it. And so here's a guy that helped you game plan for that week.
Yep.
So I think maybe above all, that's why he was in there. He did an adequate job.
Cast him as a starter. I mean, I'm not trying to cast him as like a, you know, a set starter for his career. I just thought that based on, you know, the small dose of what we had this season on the five games, he performed at a level that was better than what we've seen Josh Barrett and Sergio Brown.
That is correct.
And maybe
that is correct.
Maybe I'm just jumping to the point where I don't think
you're putting too much pressure on your minute man.
Here's the thing:
right there.
Whenever I see the ball in the air and I see one of our safeties in the area, I just cringe. And it's sad, but it's just the way it is.
All right, but they're still young, okay? They're still young, Kevin. That's what I think you're overlooking, the fact that we don't have Rodney Harrison back there.
Nope.
Okay? And because we don't have Rodney Harrison, these guys are going to have to learn on the job.
Yep.
I thought Ahedebo did that adequately.
I just would have been happy with Jimmy and Jared Page or...
Well, maybe.
Anybody.
Jimmy Page.
Jimmy Jared Page.
Yeah, I don't really understand how...
Put him out there.
Let's
get a little Led Zeppelin going.
You know, for what they have on the team right now, you know, even though I don't really get some of the safety, you know, transactions they made, you know, I think that, you know, Ahedebo did a pretty good job for his first game starting against his old team.
I would agree.
It's better than what we've seen. That was all my point, but...
I'm with you.
The offense, you know, I really, really liked the balance they showed. Again, they pounded the ball. You know, Ben Jarvis Greenells, I thought it was funny after everyone was talking about Stephen Ridley, you know, and I really like what I've seen from Ridley so far, but it was just funny to see Ben Jarvis have such a big game, kind of just being like, hey, you know, remember me, guys? You know, I did this for 1,000 yards last year. You know, I'm a pretty good back, you know, and so I thought that was good. And, you know, Deion Branch after the post game, I'm not sure if anybody else saw it, you know, he said that, you know, they're leaving a lot of points on the field, and it's funny because, you know, they've scored 30 points for, 13 games now.
Right.
And, you know, they're still leaving points on the field. And I thought they were a little sloppy, but overall, I thought you saw the team make a pretty good step. You know, at least it was against a rival, even though they're not at their best. And I'm looking forward to see what they can bring this week against the Cowboys.
All right. Let's see if we can get into the Cowboys. Thanks, Derek. Good to talk to you, as always.
Here's an interesting thought I just came up with. So when Adam and I were having this debate on Ahedebo and Sergio Brown and the safeties post-game, he brought up, just like Derek did, the run game and Ahedebo's support in the run game. And I remember when Adam brought that up, just kind of glanced over. And I think Sean Green had a pretty good game. I think he had like 21 carries for 89 yards, which is decent. You know, it's definitely not a laugher of a game. And I thought, you know, Ahedebo may have done his job and stepped up and made some tackles, but maybe they didn't flash to me because they were 5 yards down the field, you know. And maybe it's because, you know, our front seven or whatever package we're in, you know, I consider, like, when these guys are healthy, John, when you look at up the middle. Now, Sean Green is a very, up, you know, up the between the tackles, he's a powerful runner. Would you agree?
Yeah.
He does have a little wiggle, but he's a bruising.
He's a north-south
type back, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So when the Patriots are healthy, and I look up the middle, and I'm thinking, okay, you got Fat Albert and Vince there in the middle. When healthy, you got Gerard Mayo at linebacker, and I'm just thinking,
you should be stout.
You should be able to minimize the running between the tackles and not get pushed around with that much weight and that much muscle right there over center.
You should.
And maybe I'm not giving Ahidobo enough credit because it's not his fault that he's 15 yards in the defensive backfield, and by the time he gets up there to make the play, it's 5 yards. You're doing your job there. I didn't see him
slowly coming around to our side here.
But maybe it was, I was just disappointed and upset because a lot of these running plays.
Maybe you were looking for more.
And a lot of these running plays, John, whether it was Joe McKnight, but primarily Sean Green, sure, he didn't bust one 60 yards or 40 or even 30 probably. But he was getting chunks and making in what I like to call staying on schedule for the most part.
All right, so they were able to stay on schedule. They obviously weren't on schedule enough. They lost the game.
No, and they did have, I believe, three or four three and outs to start the game.
They had seven of their
total,
12 possessions.
Which I thought was great.
Three and out,
which is
extraordinary, and that was what I opened up the show with today, saying that, you know, it's hard to nitpick the offensive line, you know, which I did a little bit because I thought they were inconsistent, but the one thing that I was most encouraged about Sunday, and how I feel a little bit better this week about the defense that I did last week, even though the red zone defense wasn't as good,
it was porous,
because they improved in another area, and that is forcing three and outs.
Yep, and then also when you get to the third down, getting off the field, which they did a pretty adequate job of on Sunday. I don't think the Jets had a ton of third down conversions.
You can probably give the Jets some of that.
Yeah.
Okay?
No,
You really want to nitpick, you can give the Jets some of the blame because Sanchez is not having a very good year. He's just not.
It just stuck out to me that during the drives where they did move the ball and they were able to sustain and string together first downs, Green did pretty well, and he was pretty successful in creating second and five, second and six.
Right.
And, you know, Ahidobo probably was in on a lot of those tackles, but here I am when Green hits the ground looking up at the down and distance marker and listening to your voice saying, gain of four, gain of five, and I'm just kind of thinking, and my head just kind of goes down because I'm just kind of like, okay, we're not forcing them into second and ten.
Second and longs, yeah, second and eights at least.
But anyway,
by the way,
I get off my soapbox.
Here comes JC, who sends an email. He says, Barrett did a great job on Gates few weeks back. Granted, he wasn't 100%. Ahidobo did a great job on Keller. Bill knows how to game plan against tight ends. And Jared Page, come on, really? The dude was terrible. All right. So there you go. See, JC came back on you, by the way, on that one. All right. We've gotten into hour number two of the program. We've kind of blown right by the top of the hour, which is fine. We'll hold on to the break. I don't want to go because I got Big Al on the phone here. I want to get to him in a second. But one of the things I wanted to do for the second hour of the program, in addition to continuing with the nitpick, keep them coming. Okay, keep the nitpicks coming. Webradio@patriots.com, Facebook, and, of course, the Ace Ticket Hotline, 508-298-0398. Okay, keep them coming. But I wanted to add something else to the mix. We all know that in the history of the National Football League, at least since the 1970s, that there has been one team and one team only that has really been referred to as America's team. That being this week's opponent, the Dallas Cowboys. Now, I would argue, even though many of you know who have tuned into this program for a number of years, you know that I grew up in Texas. You know that I grew up, my hometown is Fort Worth, and that I grew up a Cowboy fan. And, you know, I still follow the Cowboys to an extent, but I'm not as large a fan, for obvious reasons, as I used to be when I was a kid. So this is kind of fun for me to have the Cowboys come up here to New England. But I also remember the heyday when the Cowboys were truly America's team and Tex Schramm was running it, Tom Landry was coaching it, and Roger Staubach was quarterbacking it for the most part. You can make the argument, I think, that in 2001, especially in light of the tragedy of 9/11, the Patriots being the underdog to end all underdogs and winning the Super Bowl over the greatest show on turf, St. Louis Rams, that the Patriots sort of took over the mantle at that time as America's team. Now, Packers fans would disagree. Steelers fans would undoubtedly disagree. But I'm curious what Patriots fans say, especially if you have been a Patriots fan for a long time. Now, long is a relative term. If you're 25 years old, 10 years would be a long time. But if you're 40 or 50 years old, then, and you go back to the 70s,
or even the 60s? Who's America's team? Which of the two franchises is more deserving of the moniker America's team? Now, a lot of people hate the Patriots because of the success, because they don't like Bill Belichick. They think he cheats. They think he cheated. A lot of people don't like the Dallas Cowboys now because of Jerry Jones. Who's America's team? Patriots? Cowboys? Steelers? Packers? Somebody else? Who deserves the moniker America's team? That was, of course, the nickname that NFL Films stuck on the Cowboys back in the 70s when Texas Stadium opened up and the Cowboy cheerleaders were all that, which, of course, every other team in the league has now copied. Curious your thoughts. Webradio at patriots.com, the Ace Ticket Hotline, 508-298-0398. Give us a call or hit me up on Facebook. All right. Thanks for hanging on, Big Al. You got the floor, buddy.
Hey, good afternoon there, John.
How are you?
All right, man. Yeah, I think that that guy was he was videotaping on the sideline. I think he was probably videotaping our cheerleaders. So we probably don't have a whole lot to worry about.
Well, listen, knowing a couple of them as I do, I can understand why.
I'll tell you, I don't care what anybody says, we got some good-looking cheerleaders.
Yes, we do.
And,
yes, we do.
You know, I guess Dallas, you know, is the kind of the traditional standard. So we'll find out, you know, this weekend who's got the hottest cheerleaders in 2011. But
yeah.
I'm sure we're right up there close to them, if not maybe even a little bit better.
We're close. We're close.
But, listen, I guess we don't really need to tape the Jets anymore. We just need to get a couple of guys off of their team to give us tips on, you know, on what they're doing. So we don't really need to tape them. I don't think we're taping them. If they're taping us, we'll find out, I suppose. But if we can get Sean Ellis and this guy, this defensive back, you know, to let us know, you know, some tips on their tendencies.
And I think they did. Then, James Ahedebo, yeah.
Then why bother videotaping them? Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So that definitely helped out this weekend. But as far as nitpicks, I mean, the only nitpick I would have would be, and I'm sure it's been mentioned a couple times, but I thought the long kickoff return after we had gotten ahead by 10 points was a little disappointing. It set them up, kind of set up our defense.
All right, that's a good one, Al. I'm glad you brought that up because that was the other nitpick that I had. I've written down here that I haven't had a chance to get to.
It was also a great play by McCourty.
It was, yeah. But I was really disturbed, and I want to nitpick on the kick coverage team allowing Joe McKnight to go for 87 yards or whatever he did. I mean, guy returns the ball 7 yards deep in the end zone. There's no way that he should get out to even close to the 30 yard line. I mean, there's no way, because you're talking about almost a 40-yard return if you get out to the 30. So, you know, you got to hold that guy to the 20-yard line. And even so, that's a 27-yard return. That's a pretty good return. That's just not a good job by our kick coverage team.
No, not. But here's what I think's going on with that, John. I think it will work itself out over the course of the season. First of all, big ups to McCourty for hustling. He could have given up on that play, and he at least got back and made the tackle, which was good. But I think what's happening is, I'm sure there's a tendency when you see the ball go to the, you know, 9 yards deep or something.
Good.
You know, nobody would ever admit it, but I'm sure some of these coverage guys are like, you know, that guy is no way that idiot's going to run out of the end zone with the ball.
Right.
and you know, you just do naturally. I think it just takes maybe a couple of strides. You relax. And,
correct.
You know, that's enough in the NFL to make a difference like that.
Right.
Plus, I think that just, even if they're not relaxing, I think that maybe the teams have got to figure out, there's like a new normal on these kickoff returns. It used to be, when they were kicking off from the 30, with most kickers, they were lucky to make it to the end zone. Usually the ball's coming down the 5-10 yard line. You're lucky to lay a glove on the guy before the 25 or 30. Now it's, you know, push back 10 yards, back in the end zone like that, and it's almost like, you know, what would happen when, in the past, when a guy would drop a punt for a couple of seconds or drop a kickoff for a couple of seconds and then pick it up. If he could get past that first wave, there was nobody left. He was gone, you know.
Right.
And that's kind of like the way this is now, I think. If you've created that situation with this rule, and I just think the coverage teams will have to adjust and not maybe put themselves in a position where, if the guy is coming out deep, sure, he could get trapped at the 10, But if he gets past that first wave, you know, he's going a long distance. And so we may have to adjust on how we cover these kids.
There's no doubt in my mind we have to. I mean, I really believe that our kick coverage team, it's as simple as they're stunned that the guy is bringing it out 7 or 8 yards deep. And I just find that they're not spread out. The spacing is wrong, and that's why we're getting burned on these returns. So that's obviously something that's got to be corrected in pretty short order.
Well, on the positive side, like everybody, I'm sure we all love that last drive. I mean, that was just terrific. I mean, the nitpicks that I've had last week and the first week of the season where, you know, not managing the clock properly in the last, you know, 5 minutes or so. This was the last 7 minutes where we just took the air out of the ball.
Right.
And, you know, played it just right, forced them to use all their timeouts on defense, put the ball in the middle of the field for Gostkowski to just chip it through there on the last carry.
Right.
I don't think Green Ellis really cared, you know, much other than getting the ball in the middle of the field.
Right.
And 3 points was enough to win
all
the game.
Needed, no, yeah. Yeah, all they needed was
no
the field.
There's no 9-point plays. Yeah.
Right.
So you just need three and game over really at that point. And sure, we also played a little bit better on the last drive. They didn't to end the game with a sack and not let them get a cheap touchdown at the end like Oakland did the week before, I think was also good. So
right.
Just the way we handled that last 5 minutes plus was just tremendous. So hopefully we can keep that up the rest of the year because that was really an improvement.
Steps in the right direction. I mean, again, I just thought that even though I think you got to give a little credit to the Jets' defense, there were some times there late in the first half, especially that drive that didn't result in any points, you know, and Brady threw the end zone pick. I mean, that was so shocking to see, and obviously he had never done that before at Gillette, but that was so shocking to see. I mean, they had a chance to put the Jets away on that first drive of the second half. I just knew that in the third quarter that they were going to get the football and come out and fire, and sure enough, first play, they hit, you know, Welker for 73.
Right,
so,
right.
You know, I to me, even though I was disappointed they couldn't score before the half, I knew that, well, what that's going to do is that's going to make that halftime a pretty rough place to be in the locker room. And that's
happened. Think about it. If we had somehow gotten 7 or 3 before half, and then if you add 7 to start the second half, then pretty soon you are kind of pulling away from them, even with the kickoff return.
Yeah, well, who's going to complain about that? Nobody.
But, overall, I thought it was just a good all-around win. You know, offense, defense, special teams, good win. And, I want to just mention a couple things also quickly. You mentioned who's America's team.
Yeah.
I think the Patriots have, you know, in a sense, taken over for the Cowboys as the, you know, America's team or, kind of the, you know, the All-American kids or whatever you want to call it. But to me, there is one team that has always been America's team for the last 40 years, and that is the Pittsburgh Steelers.
Okay.
I mean, they have tremendous fans. I mean, it is unbelievable. Here, even in Valdosta, you go to any sports bar on a Sunday that's running the package, and there's Steeler jerseys everywhere. And I don't even know where they come from. It's like they come out of the sidewalks. You know, where are they?
Frankly, how
did we get Steelers fans? They're just everywhere. It's incredible.
I don't disagree with that, but see, I feel the same way about the Green Bay Packers. I've always thought that I think Packers fans have existed obviously in force since the 60s, since they were winning NFL championships before there was ever a Super Bowl. And everywhere I go when I'm on the road, I see Packer jerseys. So that's why I threw them into the mix as well. And because the Packers obviously won last year, I think they probably deserve to be, you know, in the mix. You know, of the four teams that we talk about Dallas, obviously Pittsburgh, Green Bay, and now New England. Frankly, I think the Patriots are fourth in that mix. That's just my own personal opinion. But I wanted
they're all close together.
Well, I wanted to ask
sombrero over all of them.
I ask it only because I know some Patriots fans feel very strongly about it. You know, with the whole dynasty thing from the whole decade of the 2000s, and because they were sort of America's darling, starting with that 01 season. You know, because they came from nowhere, and we all know how this nation loves an underdog. And I think some of that shine came off though in 07, thanks to the Jets and the whole Spygate issue.
Well, you know, I don't know. I think Brady is still, he is, you know, the first and only real Patriots superstar that the franchise has ever had, where he's not just the face of the franchise, he's one of the faces of the NFL, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And I don't know if we really ever had that before him, and I don't think that he was damaged really by that, you know, and that, that thing with that Spygate, I don't think that really hurt us too bad.
No. I think they're able to bounce out of it.
I think you're right.
I think
a lot of if you know people are kind of cynical about that stuff. It's like cheating in college sports. They figure everybody does it, and it's just a matter of time before you get nabbed.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, so it's easy to kind of brush that stuff off, rightly or wrongly.
True.
I think that's what happens.
True.
But one last comment, I want to throw out something about Al Davis. You know, being an old AFL fan like a lot of us are, and I know you remember the league, you know, back in the day. And you know, it's too bad these people are leaving us. You know that we talked about Charlie Jones, and of course Lamar Hunt died a couple of years ago,
mm-hmm.
and Al Davis now, and Hank Stram's no longer with us. So it's just unfortunate, but. What a great thing. I mean, everything to me that you see that you like about pro football today, it started in the AFL.
Oh, yeah.
And the NFL adopted a lot of the things from back then. And
sure.
Really, Al Davis and Lamar Hunt pulled off probably the greatest good cop, bad cop job that anybody's ever pulled off. And those are traditionally very effective, but they did it. I mean, they got it down to a T. Basically, you could just see, you know, Lamar Hunt's talking to Tex Schramm or whoever he is trying to get a deal done. And he's saying, you know, Tex, you know, you really better deal with me, because if you don't dicker with me, you're going to end up having to deal with him.
That's true. Very true.
You know, you better
Very
deal
true.
With the good cop, because you're going to get the bad cop if you don't deal with me.
That's right.
And it just worked great. It worked out great for the AFL. And to this day, I think it's the only league where they can say that their entire membership got absorbed into the,
that's right.
you know, establishment league.
That's right.
There's been other leagues where there's been a handful of teams, three or four ABA, two or three WHA, whatever,
mm-hmm.
you could go around
right.
picking out an individual, you know. But this was the entire AFL was picked up by the establishment,
and a lot
and
of that
that's ever happened before
nope.
or since.
And sure, a lot of that was due to Al Davis, no question about it.
You bet. So hey, you know, big ups to him. And well, I think we got a good game. Looking at a good one this week with the Cowboys.
It's gonna be fun.
You always want to win going into the bye week.
Yeah,
you've always been pretty good about that.
Yeah, it's gonna be fun though. It's always fun when you can play a team that you haven't faced all that often. So.
Absolutely. Have a great one, John.
Al, thanks, buddy. You bet. Appreciate it. Al in Georgia. Let's get Mike in Florida in here. Mike, you're in the playbook. Thanks for hanging on.
Oh, no problem. Yeah, I just wanted to make my comment as far as America's team. I live down in Florida, and you know, I'm pretty much surrounded by fans from everywhere, you know, all different teams. And I seem to be the only one, whenever I mention that I'm a Patriots fan, that they say, well, you're just jumping on the bandwagon. And to me, that seems to be, you know, and I've been a fan since 85, but it seems to be the perfect example of maybe why we're considered America's team now, because it doesn't matter where I go, they always say they're just jumping on the bandwagon. So to me, that pretty much equates itself to America's team.
Why do you think that is, though, Mike? Why do people consider Patriots fans bandwagon fans?
Again, because before 2001, they were pretty much, you know, off the map. Nobody really, you know, took them seriously. So after 2001, well, they figured everybody just jumped on the bandwagon.
But wouldn't you think, though, that because of the success that the team had during the 2000s, if you will, the aught decade, that you know, I mean, let's face it, the Patriots are the team of the decade. They won three Super Bowls during that time. Shouldn't that give a Patriots fan a little credibility for not being a bandwagon fan?
No, I totally agree with you on that count. But the thing is, I have just a lot of people who they'll say, "Well, yeah, I like this team. However, I like the Patriots because of what they did during that run."
Yeah.
So I think to me that constitutes being, in a way, part of being America's team, because a lot of people did kind of jump on the bandwagon, even though they had their own team of preference.
Okay, I see what you're saying. Yeah, I kind of, you know, that I kind of agree with, because frankly, that's what Americans do. We jump on bandwagons. It's what we do. You know,
right,
we see
you know,
a good thing and we jump on the bandwagon.
I'm originally from Canada, and you know, back in the early '80s, I actually did like Dallas because they were America's team. Along came '84, '85. I'm like, hey, there's an underdog team, and they seem to always play the New England teams up in Canada, you know, New England or Jets would always be on TV. So
right.
I started following New England as of 85, and I've stayed a fan since.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, again, you know, you follow the underdog, and luckily enough, 2001 came around, and we became the team.
Yeah, that's a good point. That's a good point. You're right. I mean, let's face it. How do we become fans anyway? All fans are bandwagon fans. I you know, you get onto a bandwagon or you become a fan of a team, for one of maybe two reasons. Number one, because your father, your grandfather, your grandmother, whomever, they were fans. Okay. So that's fine. Or number two, the team, the local team that you follow wins all the time. And so you want to be a part of that success. It makes you feel better about yourself. It makes you feel better about your community. You know, it makes you just feel better. And so that's really how fans are born. And we don't know, of course, if you became, say, and there's a lot of fans in New England, as I'm sure you're aware, Mike, who are Giants fans. The reason they're Giants fans is because their grandfathers were Giants fans and their fathers were Giants fans. And so naturally they're going to become Giants fans. And, you know, how did they become fans? Because the Giants back in the 1950s were what? Winners.
Right.
And so that means they were what? Bandwagon fans.
Right.
We all become fans because we jump on a bandwagon. That's what fans are. Fan is short for the word fanatical. We're fanatical about these teams because they win and we want to be a part of it. So,
of course, don't ask me why I stuck around between 86 and 2001, but I did anyhow.
Well, because that's because you're a loyal fan.
There you
could also be, y'all could also be mistaken for a stupid fan, but I prefer not to look at it like that. I mean, I'm the same way. Okay. I like my favorite teams too, because I kind of grew up with them and I've always liked them. I think there is something to loyalty. And I think that's why fandom really is a vastly undervalued, economic force. And I think that's the reason fandom as it is, especially football fans, I think that's the reason why we were able to avoid an extended lockout and have a football season this year, because both sides, players and owners, knew that the fans would speak very loudly with their pocketbooks if football did not return. So this is why fans, if they get themselves to get in the right direction, can be effective. They drive the bus, and I'm glad the National Football League realized that.
Can I make one quick comment, and then I'll let you go?
Go ahead.
As far as Ben Jarvis, Green Ellis, and how he played, I was actually more impressed with the yardage when he was pushed back behind the line of scrimmage. He actually fought back to at least get 1 or 2 yards. Those runs were even more effective than the 7 or 8 yard gashes that he did previously. I'll let you go. Thanks a lot. Great show.
Hey, Mike, thank you for the call. You know what about Benny? He reminds me more and more, and I thought he had a very, here, I'm gonna pull a Dallas Cowboy one on you here. He had a very Robert Newhouse-like game this last week. You might remember Robert Newhouse, the former bowling ball little running back for the Dallas Cowboys back in the, you know, early 1980s, late 70s. He came from the University of Houston, and Robert Newhouse was built so low to the ground, his thighs were huge. He was just hard to tackle, because you couldn't lock your arms around him. He just kept the legs moving, and he was a very difficult player to bring down. Green Ellis doesn't have quite the physical stature of Newhouse, but he runs a lot like Newhouse did, for any old school guys that might remember Robert Newhouse. He's low to the ground. He's just hard to get underneath. He's hard to knock off balance. He's got good balance. That's the one thing Newhouse said. People described his running style as that of a bowling ball. And it was accurate. And I'm beginning to think that Ben Jarvis is a lot like Newhouse. He tends to, once he gets going, baby, he is tough to stop. And he got up a good head of steam. He's got more speed around the end than I think a lot of people give him credit for. And he's tougher between the tackles than I think a lot of people give him credit for. He's not physically imposing, although he's a stockily built guy, but he just gets the job done. And, you know, as a Patriots fan, that's really all you need to be concerned with. I got a couple of things here that I wanted to hold on a second here. Let me get this out, because I think I had a couple of fans here that were talking about him on Facebook. Yeah, Daryl sends me this. He says, "John, glad to have the win over those dirty, nasty Jets, but this win seems somehow hollow. Were the expectations just set too high? Was it the lack of hype? I just felt like the victory was somehow less. Am I alone, or have y'all in the Pats organization felt some of the same?" No, Not really. I think we described earlier why it seemed the way it was, because the Jets were a little down. The Patriots were, you know, had their tails between their legs a little bit because of the playoff loss here. There just wasn't naturally as much hype. A win over the Jets still is sweet by any other name. I think I'll wax poetic. He says, as far as my nitpick, it has to land on the Pats' red area offense. Cromartie interception wasn't Brady's fault. I didn't feel this was a stellar performance. Game could have easily been 42 or 45-14. D has shown an upward trend. Although I'm not ready to beatify it, I feel much better than after the Miami win or the Buffalo loss. Okay, somebody else wrote me here about... Oh, here we go. Sven sends this on Facebook. Was it just me or did Stephen Ridley remind you of Lawrence Maroney with his dancing against the Jets? Instead of just one cut, then downfield, he hesitated and started dancing. Maroney looked good some games, and he just hesitated, just like Ridley did this game. Well, I'm not ready to put Ridley in Lawrence Maroney's category, but I understand what you're saying, and that may have been why he came out ultimately. But Ridley was going to get the carries because, you know, Danny Woodhead was inactive. So that's why Ridley's going to get in there. Ben Jarvis, the one thing you can say about him is he's definitely a north-south guy. When it calls for him to hit the hole, he hits the hole. I don't think you're wrong, or he says, I hope I'm wrong about Ridley. I can't stand another Maroney. The last two games against the Bills and Raiders, he looked much better. Probably had everything to do with the play call and in terms of the time and the place in which he was in the game. And my guess is if they really, really didn't like his performance, like you just said, Sven, he'll hear about it this week at practice. All right, let me get a break in here, and then we're going to come back and hit the emails and hit the Facebook. Keep the phone line open, the Ace Ticket Hotline at 508-298-0398, web radio at patriots.com. Patriots have made it official. They have re-signed tight end Dan Gronkowski. So, big brother for Rob, Dan Gronk is back with the Pats after getting released a couple of weeks ago. That's the latest from Gillette Stadium. We're back in the playbook coming up.
Honey, ready to go curtain shopping?
Absolutely. There's nothing more I'd rather be doing on Patriots game day than helping make home drapery decisions.
Now with NFL Mobile on your phone, you can enjoy going just about anywhere this football season. Watch live games on Thursday and Sunday nights, all right from the palm of your hand.
So, what do you think of these lilac-colored valances?
Pats interception, yes! Sure, those will hang nicely next to the wall. It'll just light up the room.
We should shop more often.
Oh, you bet, anytime. He's at the 50, the 40!
NFL Mobile, only from Verizon. Your gateway to live NFL games and more.
The 30, the 20, the 10! Booyah! Touchdown, Patriots!
Shh, you're frightening the seamstress.
Oh, that tieback is so money.
Text NFL to 8915 to download NFL Mobile today. Verizon, official wireless provider of the New England Patriots. Message and data rates may apply. Available on select smartphones. Coverage not available everywhere.
If you didn't know, AutoTrader.com has new cars, well, I'm here inside the body of a new car shopper to enlighten you. First stop, his heart. Oh, this guy loves fresh from the showroom SUVs with Wi-Fi. Now let's go up and see what his head's thinking. See, at AutoTrader.com, you can compare brand spanking new cars and special offers. Deals everywhere. Think he's picked one? Bingo! Find the new car your head and heart can agree on. AutoTrader.com, now the ultimate new car marketplace.
Hey, it's Jim from Ace Ticket, Boston's very own ticket agency. Ace Ticket is based here in Boston, so we know every seat in every venue. We're Boston fans just like you, from Boston sports to concert and theater. Whether you need one ticket or 100, Ace has you covered. So treat yourself or someone special. Call 1-800-MY-SEATS or visit aceticket.com and take advantage of our free and easy pickup at our Fenway Park or Boston Garden location. That's 1-800-MY-SEATS.
1-800-MY-SEATS.
I love,
love,
love this card.
With my Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card, I earn more cash back for the things I buy most.
Cash back for the things I buy every day.
I earn 1% cash back on every purchase, everywhere, every time.
2% on groceries.
And 3% on gas. Automatically, no hoops to jump through.
It's as easy as 1, 2, 3.
That's 1% cash back on a cut and color.
2% back on food for the neighborhood barbecue.
And 3% cash back on getting the kids to soccer practice and football and baseball.
Extra cash back on groceries and gas. That's my kind of card.
Earn 1, 2, 3% cash back for the things you buy most with the Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card. Apply online or at a Bank of America near you. quarterly maximum on grocery and gas bonus rewards. To learn more, go to bankofamerica.com/getcashback. Bank of America, the official bank of the New England Patriots.
Copyright 2011, Bank of America Corporation.
I love,
love,
love this card.
With my Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card, I earn more cash back for the things I buy most.
Cash back for the things I buy every day.
I earn 1% cash back on every purchase, everywhere, every time.
2% on groceries.
And 3% on gas. Automatically, no hoops to jump through.
It's as easy as 1, 2, 3.
That's 1% cash back on a cut and color.
2% back on food for the neighborhood barbecue.
And 3% cash back on getting the kids to soccer practice and football and baseball.
Extra cash back on groceries and gas. That's my kind of card.
Earn 1, 2, 3% cash back for the things you buy most with the Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card. Apply online or at a Bank of America near you. Quarterly maximum on grocery and gas bonus rewards. To learn more, go to bankofamerica.com/getcashback. Bank of America, the official bank of the New England Patriots.
Copyright 2011, Bank of America Corporation.
Patriot Place in Foxborough is New England's premier entertainment, dining, and shopping destination. Experience the Hall at Patriot Place, presented by Raytheon, an interactive museum dedicated to the history of New England football. The family will want to check out the latest summer movie at Showcase Cinema Deluxe, or a concert or comedy show at Showcase Live. Shop retailers and the region's only Bass Pro Shops. And of course, there's always dinner and drinks as you dine outdoors and take in the sunset or the view overlooking Gillette Stadium. Experience world-class medical care at Brigham and Women's Mass General Health Care Center, located on site at Patriot Place. The region's only four-star hotel, the Renaissance Hotel and Spa, offers luxurious accommodations, including the ultimate in pampering at Spa Epochet. Special events are always happening at Patriot Place, from Kids Club story time every Tuesday to the area's largest classic car display. Patriot Place is located in Foxborough next to Gillette Stadium, and parking is free. Visit patriot-place.com for complete store and restaurant hours and event listings. Patriot Place. Shop, dine, enjoy.
This is Patriots Hall of Famer Steve Nelson, and you're listening to Patriots Playbook on Patriots.com Radio.
Thanks, Nelly. Back in the playbook here. There are a couple of people that have asked, okay, why did they let Gronk go to begin with? Dan Gronk. And really, the reasoning is fairly simple. He was hurt.
The hamstring or something?
Yeah, it was a hamstring. And Mike Reese just he just blogged on it on ESPN Boston a short while ago. He was hurt, and they couldn't afford to keep him on the roster. They needed the roster spot because he's just a backup tight end. I mean, let's face it. I mean, you always need that 52nd, 53rd spot on the roster to be somewhat fluid because of injuries that might happen. And obviously, it was a little bit of a gamble when they also lost Hernandez to the knee injury a couple of years ago, but they obviously weathered the storm okay. Now that Dan Gronk is healthy again, he's been added to the roster. So that's why he was cut to begin with, and they were left with only one tight end for a while, is because he just wasn't healthy. So you rehab, you get ready to go, and then when you're ready to go, then they add you back to the active roster. And the player that went because they re-signed Dan Gronk was Thomas Welch, as I told you about. So that was really behind all of that. And by the way, if you're into this sort of thing, ESPN.com's latest NFL power rankings has the Pats back up at number 2 behind the Packers. I think that equals the Patriots' highest ranking of the year. They finally passed the Saints, who are 3. The Bills are 6th. Wow, they're just not going away, are they? Good for them. Good for them. Good for Buffalo. That may get interesting when the Bills come here later this season, don't you think? I think it'll add some spice to a game that otherwise probably just, you know, wouldn't have any spice to it at all. Let's face it. All right, let me get to some emails and to some Facebook posts here so we can get to some of our nitpicks and some of our answers to the question of the day about America's team. Robert says, John, here's my nitpick of the week. Ripley looked lost on the offense this week. I thought Ben Jarvis Green-Ellis showed everyone on the team why he's the starter. He hits the holes like he knows what's going on. I do know when Woodhead gets back on track, he'll get the offense even more effective. I do miss Falk. If this is the inevitable end of a great career for Mr. Patriot, maybe we might see an appearance from him either this season or next. I think you mean week or next. Reminds so very much of the last seasons of our own Troy Brown. Okay, thanks, Robert. And he says, I go back to Darrell Stingley when he was paralyzed by Jack Tatum in the 70s. I enjoyed the 01 season simply because of the wonder of it all. To see the team you have cheered for or crossed your fingers for to win games, the atmosphere of today based on coaching and the Patriot way, you just know that'll keep them being an elite team in the AFC for a long time to come. Paul on Facebook says, John, my nitpick is Hernandez. Should we be worried about him? There was the poor drop that led to the pick just before the half, as he was overthrown several times by Brady. Were they bad throws, or he's just not as quick as he was before the injury? Of course, it was his first game back from injury. Maybe it'll just take time for him to regain that step. I think you hit on something there, Paul. He says, do you think we'll see him this weekend, or was he rushed back to play the Jets, and now we'll rest until after the bye week? No. If he was ready to go, he'll stay ready to go this week unless something, you know, unforeseen happens in practice this week. But no, they would not have done that and then rest him for a week after the bye week. Nope. That's just not how this team operates. You know, that's really a nitpick. I'll give you that one, Paul. I'm not worried about Hernandez. I think the overthrows were probably mostly on Brady because they were really overthrown. But no, they would not have brought Aaron Hernandez back if he wasn't really 100% ready to play. And I can't, you know, this team has never done that. You know, they play the injury thing so close to the vest over the last decade or so since Bill Belichick's been here. I cannot imagine them playing a guy before he's ready unless they were absolutely desperate. And I realize, and I understand, Paul, why you asked the question, because quite frankly, the Jets are a tailor-made team for the two tight end set that the Patriots have. You know, they've been without that for the previous 2 weeks, and I thought they struggled at times. So if there was ever a week to bring back two tight ends, it was against the Jets because they couldn't afford to, you know, put all their eggs in one basket covering Welker or Deion Branch or Rob Gronkowski or whomever. Gronk was ill, as a lot of people probably know now. He fought through sickness, you know, to even play against the Jets. So that made Aaron coming back even more important. Coincidence, maybe, but I really would be surprised if it found out otherwise that he was not ready to come back and they put him in there, whether it was due to, you know, the Jets game plan or because Gronk was sick or whatever, but I'd still be surprised if that had actually happened. All right, here we go. Back to the emails here. Ton of them to get to. Want to get to them all. Thank you very much for sending them. Here we go. Jack says, John, nitpicks. Albert Hainsworth, my nitpick is he's just not worth it. His production isn't anywhere what it needs to be. He's hurt too often. What I worry about is the lack of consistency. This team does better when we have the same people in place, not swapping them out for one another. I don't think it's time to give up on Albert Hainsworth yet. You know, you want Albert Hainsworth ready to play in December. So he's got, you know, some legs left in January. He's not, as we call, a spring chicken. Okay? He's not a raw rookie. You know, Hainsworth has some maintenance issues, and I think we all realize that. You didn't bring him in here to be dominating in September and October. You brought him in here to hopefully have a dominant moment or two, or at the very least be effective in December and January. That's why you have Albert Hainsworth. So I don't think it has anything to do with he's hurt too often. I don't think it has anything to do with the fact that there's a lack of consistency. This team has 11 defensive tackles and ends, and they're going to swap them out, as you say, because they have they like the fresh legs, and they hope that this continues to develop. We're at week 5. This is week 6. What did I say last week, week before? What have I said at least once each of the previous 5 weeks? You got to get through week 6 before you really get a clear picture of what we have as a football team. This is week 6. Now, if the Patriots can find a way to beat the Dallas Cowboys and be 5-1 going into their off week, we'll know what we have. If the Patriots stub their toe, and depending how they do it this week against the Cowboys and at 4-2, you know, I think that we'll have some issues that we can certainly talk about next week, but it's not going to be the end of the world either. Jack says a nitpick on the secondary. Enough said. Still an issue. I don't disagree with that one at all. And then he says, Tom Brady, this may not be game-related, but why does he just bolt off the field after a game? Everyone stays and shakes hands, but not Tom. Now, it's possible he doesn't want to stick around and shake hands with a team who hates him and calls him names. But I think he should be a bigger man and head out there and stand tall. Well, I'm not going to pretend to answer for him. He has a lot of demands on his time post-game as well. He's a family man. He's got, you know, that going for him. I know he's got responsibilities to his job, but, you know, maybe somebody will ask him that question. Sterling says, I was listening to ESPN Radio with Colin Cowherd, and he, along with Trent Dilfer, are selling the Patriots this year, not buying. They both say they're the same team from last year and the year before. One-and-done team, no defense, no true number one elite receiver. It's hard, Sterling, to argue against that right now until we continue to see the defense develop. And as I said early in the program, and I know the PFW guys were talking about it earlier as well, we saw some signs of growth this weekend by the defense. They're not there. They're still a ways away. But anytime you can take a team and stop them three and out for 7 out of 12 possessions, that's a step in the right direction. And that's what happened. 21 points is still too much to give up if you want to be a, you know, I think a world beater of a defense. Red zone defense has got to get back to the way it was before this last week, because I think they gave up those touchdowns all in the red zone. But I'll take the 7 out of 12 three and outs, because I've been harping on about this defense. My one problem is that we don't have anybody stepping up to make plays. We need playmakers on defense. Now, we didn't get any turnovers, but we had guys make big tackles. Chung did. Ahedebo did. Guyton did. We had guys make tackles. Mark Anderson did. He had a sack and a half. So we're starting to see some guys step up and make plays. That's what we need. Maybe it's because they've got a little bit more comfort level with what they're doing on the defense. Let's keep in mind now there are some different faces in different places. Dan says, oh my, I find it strange to hear constant complaining about draft picks. We've missed on a few in the late 2000s, but we had an incredible draft recently where we got an 09. We got Chung, Vollmer, and Edelman. Then in 2010, McCourty, Gronk, Cunningham, Spikes, Price, Hernandez, Mesko, which is one of the most amazing drafts we've had in the last 10-plus years. Now, this year we may have some great upcoming guys, Cannon, Mallett, Vereen, Ridley, Dowling. I think we've done a great job drafting in the recent past. Let's give the draft hating a bit of a rest. Well, Dan, you know, I understand the frustration because obviously 07 is a complete bust. 08 is almost a complete bust. 9 and 10 are better, but there would be those that would tell you, well, we needed to come up big in 9 and 10 because 07 and 08 were busts. So I guess there's two different ways to look at it. Not sure that there's any other way to look at it except that. All right, my friend Tiff in Wisconsin says, John, I have a nitpick, but first I want to say that I was incredibly pleased when Revis received the illegal contact flag. I think that could be called at least 2 to 3 times a game against him. Yes, but that's the way he plays. He gets away with it. Well, it seems like the elite corners, few that there are in the league, they get away with a lot of things. Secondly, I agree that the defense looked better. I also like that James Ahedebo got the start and did fairly well. Again, we have a lot of room to grow. Lastly, I want to say I was pleased with the way we ran the ball. My nitpick, though, is with the offense. I thought the offensive play wasn't a word. Blah. Boring, underwhelming, average-looking, boring again. I watched the game with my mom. She isn't a Patriots fan, but she said the Patriots offense looked boring. Could have played better. Specifically, she said, when we left points out there. Well, I agree with you leaving points out there, especially at the end of the half. I was shocked she said that. However, she loved the direct snap to Benny, and I think that was everybody's favorite. Agreed. Great play. Areas of improvement. I'm hoping Hernandez can complete those plays in the next game. I hate seeing him allow the ball to get away and become a pick for the Jets. Yeah. And that's really why Brady threw the end zone pick, was because, yeah, it was in and out of Hernandez's hands. You have to realize Hernandez is a second-year pro. You still like his upside more than you like his downside. Mistakes are going to happen. I am very much of the opinion, and always have been, if your hands can touch the ball, you must catch the ball. It's that simple in the NFL. So if it goes in and out of your hands, it's the receiver's fault. I don't care how the quarterback lays it in there. Quarterback isn't running for his life. Is usually running for his life, and the receiver isn't. She says, I hope Dan Gronk will be used for blocking purposes so that Rob Gronk is allowed to catch and score. P.S. I love that Brady doesn't bother with the post-game pleasantries. Love seeing him run back to the showers. He isn't satisfied with mediocre display from the offense. I'm sorry for saying we so much. Tiff, you're allowed. She's a good fan. She's a good fan. She's right there every week. She's right here every week.
We actually had a guy on the post-game show call in about Brady, and we played his presser. We took it. We didn't take it live. We rolled on it and recorded it. And it was only about 3 minutes, 40 seconds. And he again did the Stacey James with, you know, I'll take one more question.
Yeah, I saw that.
Which I get a crack on.
One more question.
I think that's hilarious.
What's up with your boy, Tom? I mean, why do you think he's doing that there, Pete?
This past week, I think. Well, when I heard him on
Dennis, a little short.
When I heard him on Dennis Account this week, I understand. I think he wanted to score 40.
So he was frustrated. I think the offense didn't live up to its potential.
And this is why, and I'm glad he felt that way, but I mean, we are so freaking spoiled in this area. It's just so ridiculous. It's absolutely absurd. And I love Tiff to death because she emails me all the time too, but to say this Patriots offense was boring is absolutely ridiculous. Absolutely ridiculous. The last 6 minutes or 12 seconds is exactly what you want to do
to close
out the game. So what is it, people? Do you want to win 40-10? I hear these different opinions.
It doesn't matter the score.
I hear these different opinions about how wins are not sexy enough or are too sexy now to win. It is absolutely infuriating to me. And if you ever told an NFL professional football, a professional football player, that they didn't win by this amount or that amount or the way they won is not sexy enough for you, they would punch you dead in the face. Because people do not realize, I say this time and time again, how difficult it is to win an NFL football game. It's tough. So who gives a damn how the hell they do it? I don't care how it's done or how sexy it looks or how unsexy it looks. You do what you got to do against that particular team on that day. I mean, enough with this stuff already. I mean, now we're hearing just the opposite. Now they didn't score enough this week. You know, it was a balanced attack the last 2 weeks, which is what I told everybody last week was going to be probably a blueprint of the Raider game.
Yeah.
This week, now I guarantee you, I will bet anybody, and I haven't been wrong yet this year a lot when I went on about game plans and matchups against different teams. They will throw the ball way more than pass the ball on Sunday. Mark it down.
You mean way more than run the ball?
I mean way more than run the ball. Right. They will throw the ball all over the place on Sunday.
Mark it down. All right. Against the Cowboys.
Yep.
Fair enough. What's coming up on the show?
Just a lot of, more recapping of the Patriots and Jets, and we'll look ahead a little bit to Dallas, but I'm going to get a lot of questions I got from people on Facebook and,
good,
of course, on web radio at patriots.com. So, you know, a lot of good things. I liked a lot of what I saw, and I totally get why Tom was frustrated. I mean, I do think he was tired. I think that can happen, you know. That is a busy week for those guys playing the Jets and all the crap that goes along with it.
Sure.
So,
sure.
I don't care. I mean, he was upset that they didn't score 40. I don't care if he was surly with the media. I could care less.
All right. Coming up in just a couple of minutes. Let's get to Sean in Salt Lake City. Sean, you're in the playbook. There we are. Hey, Sean. Still there? No. Not there. All right. Let's put him on.
You disintegrated him.
You with me, Sean? No.
No, I think he's gone. He
sounded like Texas defense.
You with me?
Ooh,
yeah,
that hurts.
I know.
Trying one more time for him because he was holding on for a while.
I know. Sean, you there? Nope.
Guess not.
Nope.
I went on a limb. Every week on Facebook, I picked 4 college games. And in honor of you.
You didn't
pick
Texas.
I did.
Oh,
plus, against the line.
I tried to tell you not to do that.
Well, I said, you know, this game might have backdoor cover written all over it, you know. But that was ugly.
It was
beyond.
Rough. Well, the one thing that I told strippers last week, and I'll tell you now, Texas plays 19 true freshmen.
They're playing true freshmen against a team that has
a lot of seniors.
I know, but,
and a fourth-year junior
in Landry
Jones.
But did you expect their worst loss under Mac Brown or whatever it was?
I was hoping not.
It just got ugly.
Yeah, they're just going to have to learn. I think they'll be fine in a couple of years, but unfortunately it's going to take them a while. Brian, John, what's up from Longview, Texas? Another good win for the Patriots Sunday. I was pleased with the Patriots running the no huddle, which is something I spoke about with you last week when they were getting ready to play the Jets. Again, the big question for the Patriots will be their defense. I think they showed some progress with their D, especially at the beginning of the game. I believe you can do the same thing this week against Dallas and can hold them for a little bit while the Patriots O score some points, then we can seal the deal. I feel as long as they can jump out to an early lead in this game, they can win it. I don't like our chances if we're playing from behind or if our defense is not making any stops. Bad combo. Well, listen, if we're playing from behind, I'll take Tom Brady any day. Here we go.
And don't forget his quarterback in the other team. We've seen him blow 24-point leads and double-digit leads more than once. So, you know what? The strategy may be to fall behind by 2 touchdowns.
Yeah.
I'm kidding, of course. But, you know, Romo is a wild card.
I know. Believe me, I know. All right, here we go. Bill says, okay. This is for Paul. I'm going to leave that for him because there's a couple of expletives deleted in there. Good thing I don't read out loud here. All right, Sean, I couldn't agree more about Sanchez. My friend and I were talking about that the other day. I think that if the Jets had someone like Palmer or McNabb, they'd probably be headed for the playoffs comfortably. nitpick, though. Still the defense, but it looked better on Sunday. I want sacks or pressure that cause interceptions. Okay. Okay. As far as the cameras on the sidelines go, how do we know these people are filming? These people filming are not filming things they shouldn't, that make its way back to the other teams. Spygate was overblown. I'm still not sure I get it 100%. According to the rules, I can't film in a certain location on the field. With today's technology, what if I do it from the stands and get the same results? It's probably worth talking about. I'm kind of at the point now where I'm kind of like, God, do we have to go through all this over again? Mike Florio put something up on Pro Football Talk as well about it and says that apparently the league is going to review it.
Well, the one thing you guys talked about earlier, that's true. If this was ever the Patriots, all hell would be breaking loose again right now.
Oh, yeah. Well, if that were a shot of Belichick or Bill O'Brien on the sideline with a Patriots guy wearing a green vest shooting the other way, oh, my God. Can you imagine the thunderstorms that would be going on?
Yep, it would be. It's so hypocritical. But, I mean, as of right now, I really don't give a crap because let them film all they want. They're not going to beat them. The Jets aren't going to be the
You know
Patriots,
what? So. I tend to agree, Pete.
I mean, let them film all they want. They change signals every couple of minutes anyway and all that stuff and whatever it is. But I can tell you, you're right. I mean, if this was ever the Patriots, they'd be leading SportsCenter all over the place.
Absolutely nuts. Just complete and totally nuts. All right. A couple more here, and then we'll turn it over to Pete. Michael in Portland, Maine says, John, I was looking at league leaders in sacks today. I noticed something. The top players in sack totals are all on losing teams. Also, I noticed that players with the highest tackle totals are also on losing teams. Good point by you.
Can I make an analogy to baseball with that?
Yeah.
It's a great point.
Yeah.
And I've done it before on this show. Maybe not this year, but last year. Most of the time, if you look in baseball at a team that leads the league in stolen bases, they're last. They're last.
Because they're trying to manufacture things,
and
right?
And sacks is a very, very, can be a very overrated stat. A very overrated stat.
Thanks. Stripper sent this to Kevin. All right, Chip Brown on OU before the game. Chip Brown's morning radio guy in Austin on ESPN 104.9. Says, I was in the tunnel and on the field before the game, and OU's players are physically more imposing than UT's. Point blank, OU's players are bigger, faster, stronger. There should be no excuse for that at Texas. Even undersized Ryan Broyles is ripped. Dominique Whaley and Kenny Stills are beasts. So is Jazz Reynolds. OU's offensive linemen look like muscle and fitness models compared to UT's. Benny Wiley, the strength coach at Texas, is doing a great job, but there's more work to be done. UT needs to do a better job of evaluating its talent from a physical standpoint. Hello, McFly! What are we not getting here? Freshmen! Freshmen are not going to be as physically imposing as seniors! What are you, dunce?
I was listening to, on ESPN game day before, Herbie and Kurt Herbstreit and Musburger. I didn't realize, I mean, we all know about the Longhorn Network now, but I didn't realize they televised practice live.
Two days a week.
Isn't that bad? Aren't you giving away information to your opponents?
Yep, 2 days a week.
Why would you do that?
Yeah.
Why would you do that?
Because
I know there's money involved.
Texas fans are nuts and there's money involved, yes.
But don't you give your opponents an edge on
they only allow certain portions of the practice to be televised.
That is shocking.
It's kind of like we only allow certain portions of our practices here to be seen by the media.
Well, that's like 5 minutes, though.
Yeah.
Just stretching. And
the entire practice is not filmed. The cameras are allowed to go down on the field during,
stretching and warm-up drills.
And the regular routine stuff that they go through, just going through the motions. But when it gets to their actual game plan stuff, then they go off to the side where the guys sit on the anchor desk and they talk about stuff without the cameras being down on the field showing the game plan being worked on for Oklahoma State or whatever.
And Mike Reese puts out the slide rule trigonometry and all that stuff and comes up with all this stuff.
that's correct. That's basically how it works. So, all right. That's it for today. Thanks, everybody. Great participation. All the emails, the phone calls, pouring in, Facebook posts, good stuff is all, always. Tomorrow in the playbook, Jim Donaldson from the Providence Journal is going to join us. Jim's a curmudgeon kind of guy.
Oh, he's going to be.
But he wrote something.
Notre Dame.
He wrote something before he had appendicitis last week that got me going, and I want him to share it with you tomorrow about the Patriots' defense and its evolution this season. So we'll talk a little about the Patriots' D tomorrow with Jim Donaldson. Eric Scalavino will be here from PFW as well, and a couple of other surprises coming up. Same Pat's time, same Pat's channel.
And the Pete Shepherd Show is next.